Responding to Race Riots and Revolution with Relevant Reformation Resources. Jude 3 tells us, contend earnestly for the faith, which was once for all delivered to the saints. The extraordinarily devastating Black Lives Matter, BLM and Antifa riots, which have left vast amounts of shops and inner cities devastated, Antifa, BLM and 19 other Marxist front organizations, their looting, their violence, their arson sprees, not only across the United States of America, but even other parts of the world, even getting through to London and other parts of Europe, absolutely devastating, staggering amount of looting, stealing, thieving, destruction. What is the point of bringing a hammer in and smashing up the cash registers, except to increase the cost of everything other customers have to buy? But riots in other parts of the world as well. Just look at this picture. This tells you a lot. Look at the policeman. He's doing nothing to restrain the man kicking him, but he's trying to hold back the person being kicked from doing anything. I think that just encapsulates the whole mentality. That's downtown London. This should be a major wake-up call to the many Christians who do not want to engage the culture and routinely censor the scriptures. To preach and teach nice, non-confrontational, Willow Creek, purpose-driven, saddleback, prayer of Jabez, lukewarm, lame, weak-kneed, comforting messages. Ken Ham has documented his book Already Gone that the vast majority of young people, well over 60% of Western churches, abandon the church within a few years of completing high school. And if they go to university, 75% abandon the faith within the first 3 years. Evidently, churches and youth groups are not preparing the young people for the real world in general. Compromise and cowardice have catastrophic consequences. Now, I used to preach Deuteronomy 28, the blessings of obedience, the curse of disobedience, and all these things. But I must say, I never imagined in my lifetime I'd see those curses of disobedience in Deuteronomy 28 lived out in our neighborhoods and across the seas as well. By failing to effectively evangelize and failing to effectively disciple the nations, many of the rock and Molotov cocktail throws in the streets are from Christian homes. Statistically, factually, we have got vast amounts of the rioters in the streets in America are not just thugs and Antifa criminals, but they're graduates of Christian colleges. I know some of them. My son-in-law knows some of them. Some people he studied with are part of this mob. Many of the arsonists and anarchists laying waste to businesses and tearing down monuments today went through church youth, apparently without receiving the kind of teaching that could have transformed their lives for the good. What were they doing? They were playing instead of praying. They were not studying the Bible. They were being conformed to the world. Charles Spurgeon, 120-odd years ago, warned us the time will come when instead of shepherds feeding their sheep, the church will have clowns entertaining the goats. And I'm afraid that's more true today than ever before. There's some good exceptions, but let's face it, that's across the board, the general majority. If you ever needed proof of the desperate need for reformation and revival in the church, the revolutions in the streets provide that in vivid color. This is the result of just preach the gospel. Just all you can do is pray. Just raise your hand. Just believe. It's easy to become a Christian. This kind of don't deal with controversial issues. Now, I was brought up in a country at war, Rhodesia, where rifles were everywhere. School teachers carried machine guns, went on roads for school outings where ambush took place. Very exciting to be a youngster there. And my mother and elder brother at Victoria Falls. Having lived through at least three revolutions, having ministered in 38 countries, Romania, behind the Iron Curtain, going through the Iron Curtain, smuggling behind the Berlin Wall, Bulgaria, Albania, Sudan, Congo, these are Sudan here, having been involved in 8 wars, not just the Sudan War and in Zimbabwe and Mozambique, up at the border, Southwest Africa, Angola, preaching in Angola. That's Colonel Breitenbach sitting there on a frontline outreach. We were preaching to the commies there in Jonas Savimbi's headquarters in Jumba. Colonel Breitenbach joined our mission in 1988 and took part in our training courses in 1989, 90, 91, 92, 93, 94. He is part of our Biblical Worldview Summits, Great Commission courses, taught anti-tracking and tracking by a person like Colonel Breitenbach, you can imagine. Here on a mission where we preached for a month through every military base in the whole of Sector 10. We're in the field, we're traveling, we're camping with the troops, and we walked into Angola to preach to the communists. In Zambia, ministering to Egyptian Coptic Church, Nuba Mountains, walking behind the lines in Nuba Mountains, being bombarded, and here with Commander Silva Kiir, who today is president of South Sudan. But back then, he was arguing with me in 2001 that it's absolutely impossible that South Sudan could ever be an independent country. And funnily enough, he's now the president. Just 10 years after, he was telling me it's absolutely impossible, the map will never be redrawn. And I was arguing that that's the only way you'll ever have peace, is if South Sudan breaks away from the Muslim majority. You'll always be a Christian black minority in Sudan unless you redraw the map, and then you can be a majority in your own country. It's the only way for peace forward. I understand what's happening, and I understand the role of cultural Marxism. It's like most of us, we don't understand plumbing, electricity, or computers and so on, and a problem comes and you call a tech person there, and to them, they walk in. They know it. I mean, they've seen it. There's no mystery. They know exactly how it works, and they can immediately put the finger on the problem, and we stand back and say, wow. But they've looked at it. I've been through these revolutions. As long as I can remember, we've been living amongst Marxist revolution. I know how these guys work, and I know what's on the agenda. I know what comes next. Lived in Rhodesia, Southwest Africa, Namibia, South Africa, and all these other places. I know the way the Marxists think. I know what their agenda is. I understand their strategies and their tactics. And while Americans might be really confused what's happening, to me it's as clear as daylight, and I've been warning them about it since 1988. America's wide open, they're not prepared, they don't know what's coming, but we know what's coming because we've been like the canary in the coal mine. And I got that insight from Dr. Martin Bosma, who is the second commander of the largest political party in the Netherlands. Now, Netherlands doesn't have a majority party because they always need coalitions. But the Freedom Party of Geert Wilders, Martin Bosma is number two, and they get the largest amount of votes in the Netherlands. Doesn't make him prime minister because the left have coalitions against him. But he wrote the book Minority in the Own Country about South Africa. And he got his master's degree in how the Dutch media lied to the Dutch people to betray the kith and kin in South Africa into the hands of the Marxist ANC. And that South Africa is the canary in the coal mine. And what's being done to South Africa is the agenda of what they plan to do to all of Europe. And just as South Africans were once a majority in their own country, now a minority in their own country, so that is the agenda of the illegal immigrant crowd. They're trying to turn Netherlands and all of Europe to where they will be a minority in their own country and oppressed by, for example, these Muslim jihadists who want to chop their heads off and so on and burn down their churches. And Martin Bosma understands the threat because he's been here and he's learned from South Africa. Well, we know how Marxists work. We understand their strategies. We understand their mentality, and we know what their agenda is. So for over 30 years, since 1990, January 1990, I've been promoting biblical worldview summits. The first was held in Constantia at the Glenville Bible College of the AB. For over 30 years, I've been enthusiastically promoting home education. We had our first Christian Cape Christian Action education seminar up in Belleville in 1990, promoting home education, and it seemed awfully radical back then. Yet most Christians have chosen to ignore the clear and present danger of Marxist revolution. The revolution is the reality of the 20th century. Since 1917, Marxism and communist revolution has been the defining movement destroying the 20th century and turning the 20th century into the worst century in the history of the church. The 19th century was the greatest century of Christian advance. In the 19th century, Christians got to every country, tribe, nation around the world, had the greatest expansion. Christianity became the first truly international religion, and the quantum leap of the church was just unbelievable. And the 19th century is the greatest century of hymns, the greatest century of missions, the greatest century of inventions, and the 20th century has been the worst century in the history of mankind for massacres of innocent civilians at the hands of their own governments, communist, secular governments overwhelmingly. More Christians have been martyred for their faith in the 20th century than all previous 19 centuries combined. Evolution says everything's getting better. Well, the 20th century disproves that. 20th century things have gotten a lot worse. Throughout all of history, generally speaking, in Christian nations, every generation was better off than the previous generation. The children were richer than the parents, had a higher standard of living. The grandchildren had a higher standard of living than the parents and the grandparents. But it's been reversed since I was born. I've seen it going the other direction, where every generation's got a lower standard of living, more problems, because of the deliberate sabotage of Christian civilization. And I would put most of the blame, overwhelming majority of the blame, on the state indoctrination. You can't even call it education. They're indoctrination gulags. And these morons coming out of the universities today know less than when they went in, and it's been proven. In fact, the studies that Answers in Genesis and others will show you is that for every year a child stays in the public schooling system, they get dumber. The longer they stay in the system, and in fact, they find that they're not too bad up to about grade 3, and by grade 4, they really start going south. And by high school, virtual imbeciles. By university, incapable of logic and comprehension and unable to even engage in proper debate. It's an absolute disaster. And the reason why you've got so many stone-throwing mobs on the streets who climb down someone's throat for just having another opinion, well, this is a result of the state indoctrination gulags. Education is not what you think it is. I mean, in America, by the way, they have the school bus, and these yellow school buses pull up. You can be in the middle of nowhere. That blasted, cursed, damned state gulag indoctrination center bus will come to your door and pick up your kid to drive you there. You won't believe how many of these yellow buses I've got all around America. And, I mean, what's on the back here? That's basically where they stand. No Christianity, no praying, no Bible, and so on. You might come in with variety, and you might come in with character, but they stamp them in all like drones, and they come out, they can't even think differently. It's really bad. For example, when missionaries went to China, they discovered that the Chinese had this weird idea of foot binding. They thought tiny feet was awfully beautiful on a woman. And so they bound the children's feet from the time they were small so that they didn't exactly have feet but hooves. And you can see on the left what happened by the foot binding, and on the right if you had normal feet. And this is crippling. And they did this to every girl. They forcibly bound their feet tighter and tighter and tighter, not allowing them to develop normal feet. And you could imagine they wouldn't exactly be able to be sure-footed like a deer running on a mountain. And this is deformity. Then you've got other, of course, nations that believe stretching earlobes, stretching lips. And then you get head binding. There are tribes in Africa that have actually had where they think that a shaped cone-like head is very attractive, so they literally would bind heads. You'd wonder how it must be like having a headache 24/7. But this head binding is just one of the things that you find amongst pagan nations. Well, let me tell you, what we've got in our secular humanist state schools is worse than the Chinese foot binding or these head bindings. You got a lot of people who just don't know what's going on. I mean, 90% of people don't know what's going on right behind them. They miss it. And you can just imagine this tour guide saying, if you look over there, far in the tree, you might see a lion just in the shade. They don't see the one right next to him. The Communist Manifesto of 1848 had as one of its most important points compulsory education. State-controlled education. State-trained teachers. State-certified teachers who can't teach without a state certification. State-produced textbooks. Indoctrination, in a nutshell. Through all the centuries, Christianity pioneered all education. The vast majority of schools in Africa were pioneered by Christians. The vast majority of universities worldwide, pioneered by Christians. Every branch of science, pioneered by Bible-believing Christians. 1848, the communists realized, you know, we're going to lose unless we can get the next generation. We've got to get into the education business. Of course, not to make people intelligent, but to stop them getting intelligence, to stop them thinking and stop them being. So the Department of Education is sort of like a Ministry of Forestry. Ministry of Forestry is Ministry of Deforestation, but called the Ministry of Forestry, it sounds more positive. But basically, they've chopped down millions of trees. It's not that they're planting trees, they're chopping down whole forests. I used to drive down the N2, past the airport, all the way up to Crabeau, without seeing the mountain or other things around, because there's forest on both sides, the whole way. You could hike from Constantinik, up the bridle path, Constantinik, all the way up onto the mountain, most of the way in total shade. As you pass through this cathedral of forest, Celia Forestall, chopped down, Ministry of Deforestation. Well, that's what our Department of Education is. It's actually the Department of Non-Education or Diseducation or Indoctrination or the opposite of education, just like our Ministry of Law and Order. In Zambia, I was told a joke back in 1998. I was over there in Zambia, and they said to me that the South African ambassador arrived, new South African ambassador in Lusaka, so they introduced him to Zambian Ministry of Naval Affairs. And the South African ambassador said, you can't have a Ministry of Naval Affairs. Zambia is a landlocked country. The Zambian said, but in South Africa, you've got a Ministry of Justice. Yeah. It's not that funny, really, because it's true. Every department is the opposite of what it actually is. Just like 1984 George Orwell. Ministry of Love, they organize the torture. Ministry of Truth, they organize the lies. Ministry of Plenty, they organize the rationing and the starvation. Ministry of Peace, they organize the wars. That's the way it is. And why did George Orwell know all this? Well, he worked as a policeman in the British Empire, and then he was Ministry of Propaganda during the Second World War. So, I mean, he knew. John Dewey is a name you should know. He's a Marxist. He's a signatory and drafter of the Humanist Manifesto in 1933. He designed secular humanist education for the United States of America. We've got a lot of experts on him. If you've watched the Agenda film, you'll know more about John Dewey. He organized the system which is brainwashing entire generations. If you want to know how it is that children on the streets, or not just children, adults on the streets, are doing the insane things they're doing in America, look no further than John Dewey and Karl Marx's ideas. And George Orwell, he helps you to understand four legs good, two legs bad. That's the way it works. Samuel Blumenfeld is a Jew who was interested in education. He did studies, and it turned him into a Calvinist, and he is converted. And he realized when it comes to education, all roads lead to John Calvin, and he ended up becoming a Christian and writing how the National Education Association is nothing less than a Trojan horse. And, of course, the Clintons came out with Common Core, which is nothing other than communism, taking over the education system. The best film to understand this is Indoctrination. If you haven't seen it, well worth it. Absolutely outstanding, showing indoctrination. Indoctrinating the nation. Public schools and the decline of Christianity in America. There is nothing that will kill Christianity faster than sending one's children to state schools. Now, I was warning of this back in 1990, and I remember speaking to a teachers group about what, on the basis of what I'd seen overseas, Eastern Europe, United States, and the hostility from South African teachers. We would never allow politicians to pervert our profession. We're professionals. We would only, and, well, praise God, I hope you do. I hope you resist this. I hope you got the backbone. Well, I've seen those same teachers happily going into, okay, class, you're all going to write tributes to Nelson Mandela on Mandela Day and all this. They just have gone with the flow. Totally happy. Atheism, situation ethics, LGBTQ, no problem. The bulk of them. What do you call the politicians who change different sides? Political prostitutes. What do you call a journalist? You know? I mean, they're prostitutes. What do we call these teachers who prostitute their profession to appease political and LGBT perversion groups? It's disgusting. And here you'll hear from teachers on the inside. and principles in others, and what happened when they tried to teach with integrity. They should have signs warning about state indoctrination centres. The kids getting on the yellow bus, and don't think our schools in this country are that much better. I mean, American ones are worse, but the Southern ones are really struggling to catch up fast. And this, what do they call it this year? CSE? Comprehensive Sexuality Education? Sick as it comes. And personally, I think it's child abuse. It's absolute child abuse. And I don't blame the kids for feeling like this. That's the way I'd feel as well. I think the schooling system is so disgusting. And they're teaching you to conform and indoctrinate you to actually hate everything you stand for. So calling the atheists, that is child abuse. This is totally normal. Yeah. And you wonder why your kids hate everything you stand for. Well, if you send them to state schools, like when I first went on a speaking tour with my son Calvin, he was only about 5 or 6, and we got to a school and he wanted to stay there for the day. I thought, well, that's great. And I headed off to the radio station to record some things. And I came back to get a picture of my son actually in a classroom sitting in a desk because we homeschooled. And he wasn't there. I said, do you know where my son is? And I said, he asked to go to the library. So, okay, went to the library, asked the librarian, have you seen my son? He came in for a few minutes and then he's out. And I walked out thinking, I wonder where he is. And next thing I hear him screaming at the top of his lungs in the back of someone's motorbike, roaring past. And, I mean, that was it. When I later asked, he said, they want me to sit still in the desk and be quiet. Yeah, how disgusting is that? I mean, that's no way to bring up a child. Just think of the brain-numbing garbage that they put in the schools. And it sucks their life out. You sentenced to 12 years in this. I mean, this is worse than going to prison. If we're to avoid a future of cultural separatism in this country, it's imperative that we end the systematic indoctrination of teachers and students. In many cases, don't blame the teachers, because the teachers have also been indoctrinated. Many of them are products of the same indoctrination system. So you start to Google, school makes me, and what comes up? Depressed, suicidal, anxious, cry, feel stupid, sick, so tired, sad, tired, so stressed. Try it. State schools are anti-education. It's so disgusting. And we expect it in a communist nation like North Korea and Red China. I mean, you understand. I mean, they're communist states. What you don't expect is that this is in the free, independent West. But in fact, it is. And our universities are the worst of all. Just try and have an intelligent discussion and have an alternative opinion on university campus. See what happens. You will not believe the intolerance and the total lack of maturity and the inability to process or accept someone having an alternative viewpoint. Where did that come from? A lot of indoctrination. Alexander Solzhenitsyn spent years in Soviet gulag. He gave us the term gulag. Just get these quotes. And if you can look past these silly British girls in the foreground, what do we see behind? Poster of Martin Luther King, Jr. Che Guevara, low-life, dirty, unwashed Marxist mass-murdering thug who boasted of having killed 4,000 men, women, and children in cold blood in execution squads, personally. And, of course, His Excellency, the revered god of the new South Africa, Nelson Mandela. What do these three posters, or four posters, have anything to do with education? Absolutely nothing. But that's on a British school classroom. Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, the generation now coming out of Western schools is unable to distinguish good from bad. Even those words, good and bad, are unacceptable. This results in impaired thinking ability. No jokes. You just try and reason with a product of state education. Another quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Modern society is hypnotized by socialism. It is prevented by socialism from seeing the mortal danger it is in. One of the greatest dangers of all is that you have lost all sense of danger. You cannot even see where it's coming from as it moves swiftly towards you. Socialism of any type leads to a total destruction of the human spirit. To destroy people, you must first sever their roots. Why are they destroying monuments? Why are they destroying buildings? Why are they destroying historic plaques? You've got to sever a people from their roots. Another quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn. In keeping silent about evil, in burying it so deep within us that no sign of it appears on the surface, we are implanting it, and it will rise up a thousandfold in the future. When we neither punish nor reproach evildoers, we are ripping the foundations of justice from beneath new generations. In our country, he's talking about the Soviet Union, the lie is not only a moral category, it's a pillar of the state. The state's built on lies. The timid civilized world has found nothing with which to oppose the sudden revival of barefaced barbarity other than concessions and smiles. Now, he could not have realized how appropriate that would be today when he wrote this. And this is about 40 years ago. Because what has been the response of most of the Democratic Party governors, mayors, police chiefs in America to savagery, murder, arson, destruction? Tell the police, stand back, stand out, do nothing. So what happens? Worse. Next night, even worse. Destroy the whole police station. Abandon it, walk away. They're ripping the foundations from the future. You cannot do that and expect there to be any law and order or respect for life and property in the future. Hollywood has been subverting and seducing entire generations. Mainstream, lamestream, disinformation and deception is the norm. So we've got newspapers that disinform, we've got entertainment that defiles you. And the Gramsci termite strategy to subvert and capture the culture. Capture the culture, have they ever? And the way they capture the culture is by beating to death free speech on the university campus in the name of tolerance. You're intolerant. But the point is, isn't tolerance meant to be you tolerate another view? Well, not yours, that's for sure. Well, some of you may recall when South Africa was like this. I remember that I used to go on dates to union buildings at night, middle of night, go and sit there, lawn, look up at the stars. It, safe as anything, police might wander by now and then. I mean, it's just president's place. You can't even get near it right now. It's when you do, you've got to wade through piles of litter and rubble. And this is Pretoria now. Destabilization, destruction, looting. This comes from police standing back and doing nothing when there's looting. You loot, you destroy, you burn, and next, more. In 1 year in South Africa, 1,400 pentechnicons were looted and burned out in this country. 1,400, including 33 just at that one toll gate in on the N3 in Durban. And so the Americans are just going to discover how this is going to work out because they've now got a whole lot of areas that are defunding the police. They're going to see how swimmingly that works. The destruction, you just wonder what happens. This beautiful, beautiful historic building, the town hall in Bloemfontein. The mission of a Christian is to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. That's certainly a minister's and a missionary's job. We are not to give comfortable messages to the comfortable. The bulk of our people live in comfortable homes, travel in comfortable cars, to comfortable air-conditioned shopping centers, and to comfortable, often air-conditioned churches, and then they hear mostly comfortable messages. Our job as Christians and witnesses is to upset people, to get people to think. We need to make disciples of all nations and teach obedience to all things the Lord has commanded. You can't do that with a purpose-driven life, Willow Creek, sinner-friendly, prayer of Jabez stuff. You've got to preach the law. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. Now, for over 14 years, I've been dealing with these kind of vital issues here at the Reformation Society. We are the beneficiaries of centuries of teachings, and many of the books are around us here, and so many things to remind us that we are beneficiaries of. And we've produced week by week, over the last 14 years, lectures and audios and PowerPoint presentations and videos, and some of them books. Why? A lot of people said, why are you dealing with history? Karl Marx said the first battlefield is a rewriting of history. I had to get involved in this battle because the first time I came back from my first cross-border mission to Mozambique and I reported on what was going on, the persecution church killing Christians, I reached resistance. I even got hauled before the church in Pines. My Pines Baptist Church diaconate got there and the president of the Baptist Union came down and members of the Baptist Union executive came down to meet with me. I didn't know that there were so many. There's this massive room filled with these people. And they said, we are trying to get South Africa to go to one man, one vote, black majority rule in South Africa. And you come back with reports like this from Mozambique. I said, there's 600 Baptist churches being persecuted in Mozambique. Don't you care about them? Reporting back on black Christians being murdered in Mozambique. That's it, they said. We don't need to hear this. Nobody wants to hear this. This is Peter Hammond contra Mundum. Stop talking about Mozambique. We're trying to get South Africa to get the same kind of government as Mozambique. Now, let me remind you. These are white, English-speaking Christians in Pinelands, Baptists, evangelicals, who preach a born-again message, rebuking a young missionary, I was only 22 at the time, for reporting back on what was going on in Mozambique. And it was, we want South Africa to go the same way as Mozambique. We don't want to hear bad things about what's going on in Mozambique. I was basically told to shut up and all that sort of thing. Yet many Christians declare they're not interested in history. Well, it's like those people say, I'm not interested in politics. Well, you don't have to be interested in politics, but politics is very interested in you. And if you do nothing in politics, they still will decide what to do with your money, how much taxes you're going to pay, how many rates you're going to pay, what the money goes to, supports abortions and things like that. And they can also tell you, you've got to close down your business and you're not allowed to go outside and you've got to wear a mask. And that's politics. You may not be interested in politics. Politics is interested in you. You may not be interested in history. But history affects everything that goes on around you. You can't understand your present or your future unless you understand the past. And you can't predict what others are going to do unless you studied what's happened in the past. And so when I was going on the Reformation 500, three continent, five nations, speaking to her back in 2017, 500th anniversary of Martin Luther launching the Reformation, I came to a church in Belgium. And the pastor said to me, my people aren't interested in history. I said, well, that explains where your country is going to hell in a handbasket, why your church is in the pitiful, pathetic state it's in. You can imagine our conversation went swimmingly from there, because people who are not interested in history, I had a school teacher in here, sitting right over here in the Reformation Society, saying, I'm not interested in history, a school teacher. Well, no wonder our children are in a mess they're in, if you've got school teachers like that. Now, after decades of history books being rewritten to villainize the victims and victimize the villains, and Hollywood distorting history through their vile films, produced by scum like this pedophile, old Weinstein, Harvey Weinstein. And it's not just Harvey Weinstein. It turns out a whole slew of these pedophile creeps up there in Hollywood, masses of them, all Academy Award winning characters, I'm sure. They've been abusing people. They've been involved in all kinds of sexual abuse. A bunch of sickos. Well, do you really think they can be sick in their souls and it not to come out in the movies? Well, this, I don't know why people were surprised. I said, if you'd seen any of the films of Harvey Weinstein, you'd know he's a sick, sordid, blaspheming, antichrist pagan. You don't need to know that it's in his personal private life. You can see it on the big screen, for goodness sakes. I mean, they think these people are all saints while they produced vile, blasphemous, antichrist films. The fact that people were shocked to hear the truth of what these characters like Jeffrey Epstein and Harvey Weinstein were up to, how naive can one be? Christian young people have now joined these rioting mobs, and now libraries and museums are going up in flames. Monuments are being toppled in the public square, and it apparently all started in Cape Town at UCT in 2015 with Roads Must Fall. And this imbecility, because it was not dealt with, just spread throughout the country, and now it's bounced across the seas and another hemisphere. And it's not just that communists have been doing it. Muslims have liked desecrating Christian graves, smashing Christian gravestones, bulldozing down tombs of prophets like the prophet Jonah and the prophet Joel and prophet Daniel. Dynamite, blow up, destroy the history. This is what ISIS has done. Understandable. They would hate Christian history and testimonies in the area. But now in the United States of America, you've got them attacking monuments, trying to take down monuments of Confederate generals, great heroes, or such as Robert E. Lee, who is respected by everybody, even by his enemies. In fact, so much so that Abraham Lincoln asked him to lead the Union armies. But they want to take down these statues. George Orwell, who was once a communist, said the most effective way to destroy a people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history. He ends his book, 1984, with every record has been destroyed or falsified. Every book has been rewritten. Every picture has been repainted. Every statue and street building has been renamed. Every date has been altered. And the process is continuing day by day, minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right. How did he know this? How could he predict this? Writing this in 1948, he had been to Stalin's Russia. He had been a Ministry of Propaganda in England. He'd been a policeman. He had been a newspaper editor. He knew. He could see it coming. And now they're destroying monuments, which cost a lot of money to put up. And there were tourist attractions, which added value to the communities and enhanced the education experience of people. Whoever controls the past controls the future. Whoever controls the present can control the past by rewriting history books. And so you can see these attacks on monuments, on history. You see, history matters. Communists see targeting of history as their first priority. Should that not give us a clue that we should be concerned about history? The Bible tells us these things were written down for instruction. And that's why we've produced history manuals, Christian History of Africa, Slavery, Terrorism, Islam, Victorious Christians Who Changed the World. Here's 32 chapters that came from 32 presentations at the Reformation Society. And Greatest Century Reformation, our first year of Reformation Society presentations, ended up as chapters in this book, which has gone through different editions. Greatest Century Missions, well, that grew out of our Great Commission courses. And Sketches from South African History, also from our Reformation Society. History matters. Truth matters. 500 years ago, reformer, professor Martin Luther warned, "I'm much afraid that schools will prove to be wide gates to hell unless they diligently labor in explaining the Holy Scriptures, engraving them in the hearts of youth. I advise no one to place his child where the Scriptures do not reign paramount. Every institution in which men are not constantly occupied with the Word of God must become corrupt. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." By the way, that's written over a lot of universities, including the entrance to Harvard. Well, I think the professors and students have long forgotten that. "You cannot trust any government, any state, with the molding of the minds of future voters. Conflicts of interest. Governments don't want well-informed citizens who will make their job more difficult. God commanded his people, learn not the way of the heathen. The control of education should be in the hands of parents, and the content of education must be Bible-based, or it's not education at all. Children do not belong to the state. Children are made in the image of God, and they are entrusted to parents to bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. All parents should be involved in the parents-teacher associations of their local school and take an active role in the education of the youth according to biblical principles. And if they're involved in the parents-teacher association, they'll discover very soon they're not there to in any way have anything to do with the education of the children, but to help with fundraising and maybe some sports events. And you've got to be on a school governing body. And even then they'll find they still don't have a say over the teachers and the textbooks that influence their children's mindset. So it would actually teach them very soon that the best thing you can actually do is pull your kid out of the school and begin to do homeschool, because it's shocking what goes on even in independent Christian schools, so-called. We all know the first part of Hosea 4 verse 6, "My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge." But how many have read the whole verse? "My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you as my priests. Because you have ignored the law of your God, I will also ignore your children." That's a terrifying verse. As a father and a grandfather, I can think of nothing more terrifying than the thought that sins of omission or commission by me could bring God's judgment or curse or negative consequence on my children and grandchildren. Horrific thought. But this is why our society is in a mess they're in. Because people have hated knowledge, despised knowledge, rejected the word of God. Dr. Martin Luther declared, "If I profess with the loudest voice and the clearest exposition every portion of the truth of God's word, except precisely that point which the world and the devil is at that moment attacking, then I'm not confessing Christ, however boldly I may be professing him. For where the battle rages, there the loyalty of the soldier is proved. And to be steady on all the battlefront besides is mere flight and disgrace if he flinches at that point. Now, I don't know what other ministers and missionaries are thinking at this time. But many times in the 43 years I've been a Christian, I have seen, I don't want to deal with this. I know there's going to be a lot of negative consequences, but I must. Because if I'm not, then I won't be faithful. I'm guilty of cowardice, desertion in the face of the enemy. I must stand up, I must step out, I must speak out on these different issues at different times, such as communist persecution of the church, Islamic persecution of the church, what the Quran teaches on jihad and slavery and abortion. And there's so many different issues. And I remember the day when Christine McCafferty came to me. I'd assigned her to deal with producing a new Fight for Life book. And she came and said, we need to bring out this book on the pink agenda. And I was, oh, no, I've got enough enemies. I don't need to get into the homosexual debate. And she convinced me this is really important. And I remember at that time also feeling, don't be a coward. And I just knew, we're going to get more grief for this. And I did. The attacks from the commies and the pornographers and the abortionists was nothing compared to the vileness of these homosexualist activists and what they poured out on me and my family. In Die Burger, no less. Slandering me and my entire family in most disgusting way. I actually took it to the press ombudsman and had a judge adjudicate and forced him to retract because it was so disgusting. There's nothing like the intolerance and the vile malice that you will get from these people who talk about tolerance and love. But Martin Luther's word stands to us in so many things. I am astounded at how many ministers of the gospel are totally spineless, cowardly, deserting, AWOL from the fight when it comes to all kinds of battles. Whether it's the idolatry of Mandela or Martin Luther King, whether it's the idolatry of BLM, whether it is the gay GB thing, the redefinition of marriage, CSE, comprehensive sexuality education, schools, whatever it is, there's different battles that come up at different times. And if we keep quiet, shame on us. For years, we in Frontline Fellowship have been warning those that those who persecute the church in communist and Muslim lands are also involved in psychological warfare, guilt manipulation, gaslighting, which most people don't fully understand, but it's a form of mental abuse in which information is twisted or spun, selectively omitted to favor the abuser, or false information is presented with the intent of making the victims doubt their own memory, perception, sanity. You see the Muslims do it. You see these Islamic jihadists. The moment an Islamic terrorist attack takes place, maybe they've chopped people's heads up, blown people up, whatever it is, driven a bus through a Christmas market, and then what's the first thing? Ah! You've got to be worried about Islamophobia. Somebody might harm some poor innocent Muslims. And nobody cares about the victims. But they're always there gaslighting you to make you feel sorry for the abusers. And right now, the very people who are doing the burning, looting, destruction, you've got to feel sorry for them. Don't worry about their victims. This is typical. Absolutely typical. This is gaslighting. It comes from an Ingrid Bergman film, 1930s, brilliant film, and we've got in the library, but just to understand the abuse of this particular husband who made his wife paranoid and neurotic, thinking she is insane and giving her the impression that everything was her fault, and where she doubted her own memory, doubted everything, and just this brilliant psychological game of destroying her own confidence in herself. And this gaslighting is exactly what is being done to Christians, people in civilization all over the world. It's a form of psychological abuse by narcissists. Well worth looking into that. The Stockholm Syndrome. We could deal with that in a long time, but let's just stick with one slide here. A psychological phenomenon which hostages express sympathy and empathy and have positive feelings towards the captors, the hijackers, the ones who threatened to kill them, the ones who, in Stockholm, they took over a bank and strapped explosives to these people that they'd kidnapped and threatened to blow them up if the police came in and things like this. And the incredible thing is they all developed total empathy for the abusers and even defended them and attacked the police when the police were trying to rescue these poor hostages and ended up not wanting to press charges but wanted to defend the ones who'd wanted to kill them and who abused them. And so since then, it's been called the Stockholm Syndrome because a lot of people like that. I'd say a massive amount of people in South Africa have Stockholm Syndrome, where they, oh, isn't Cyril such a wonderful president? Oh, you know, and Stockholm Syndrome. Cultural Marxism's critical race theory is also very hard, very important to understand. The Frankfurt School, they're all communists. Now, the term racist, you can make it an acronym, rather annoying communist-inspired silencing tactic. It's a word conjured up by Leon Trotsky, the head of the Red Army who butchered millions. And this mass-murdering communist thug invented the word racist in order to silence opposition to communism. So if you were being anti-communist, anti-Bolshevik, then obviously you were anti-Semitic racist. Yeah. Now, Antonio Gramsci, who's known as the author of the Gramsci strategy, he was the head of the Communist Party in Italy. And after the First World War, he said, look, we got lucky. Lenin got lucky. But World War One and the defeat of Russia and the fall of the Tsar was a fluke event. It's not something you can replicate easily. This is like a once-in-a-millennium event. So he said, this violent revolution is not going to work in the rest of Europe. Europe's too Christian. We need the termite strategy. And so he, along with these other Frankfurt School of communists who all fled Germany in 1933 when nationalists took over, and they went to America and parked off in Columbia University and then got to Harvard and took over Hollywood and so on. Their idea was you cannot defeat the West militarily. It's too strong. It's too Christian. We need to alter their mind from being a Christian mind to being a non-Christian mind and then into an anti-Christian mind by getting them to think of everything without reference to God and the Bible and Jesus Christ in particular. And we've got to be like termites eating our way through the five pillars, the five culture-carrying, culture-transforming institutions of society: education, entertainment, news media, political institutions, religious institutions. But Herbert Marcuse, that's the one in the middle with the pipe, he added another element. He said, we've got to go further. He said, you can't just erode the institutions. The only way you're going to be able to is you've got to get the people of the West to become sexually perverse. We must use foul language, introduce it a little bit at first and then a bit more and a bit more in the theater, art, music, films, that gradually we must get the West to not only accept, but get the Christians to be perverse and to think perverse. And we use obscenity and blasphemy and vulgarity and pornography like verbal grenades to subvert Western Christian civilization. And that was the Frankfurt School. And they basically took over the United States entertainment industry in Hollywood, and they took over the universities from Hollywood and from Columbia, Harvard, and so on. They're all Jewish Marxists in Frankfurt, and they all fled in 1933 for obvious reasons, because they could tell that they weren't going to have a very hospitable situation with nationalists taking over there, and they subverted America. And this is what cultural Marxists want you to think is normal, natural, and healthy: homosexuality, perversion, and so on. And of course, the other thing was multiculturalism. They put the Communist Party USA put as their number one goal at the beginning, multiculturalism. We need interfaith, we need multiculturalism, we need the termite strategy. But these are all, you've got to use every form of asymmetrical warfare to break down Christian civilization. America's too strong and too Christian. You've got to erode their moral strength. You've got to dilute them, bring in people from other nations who won't respect their laws and smash things up. And you can see how well this works in Sweden. These Muslims all live on welfare, burn the Swedish flag, burn the Swedish cars, burn the Swedish police vehicles, attack the people. I mean, yay. Their goal is the secularization of society. Look, atheist.net. Put Christianity in the trash can. No Christianity. The goal of the critical theory or the cultural Marxism of the, in other words, Karl Marx, Marxist theory is economic. But we need to go moral and cultural. Cultural Marxism in order to get to the economic socialism Marxism, in order to get political control later. Whereas in Russia, they got political control first, then they worked their way down. But now we're going to work grassroots up. Get the culture, get the morals, get the values, subvert. Finally, we can get the economics, and ultimately we'll get political control. They're working the other way around. So this was the Gramsci strategy. save the planet, throw the Bible in the trash can. This is the kind of thing cultural Marxists promote. Literally destroy Christian monuments. And so cultural Marxism has produced a generation of people who can say going to hell and proud. If Jesus returns, kill him again. Undo Jesus.org, put Christianity in trash can. There are people, now, to get people to that, you can't just get people to switch over from being Christians to being anti-Christian like that. This has taken generations of eroding. And they've been aided and abetted by pastors and churches and theological cemeteries where just preach the gospel. And by that, they mean less and less. It's not repent, take up your cross, follow Christ, deny the world, forsake the world, follow Christ, submit to God, resist it. No, you're not going to. No. Just believe. Just pray this prayer. Just raise your hand. It's so easy to be a Christian. It's that kind of, you know, wimpy, weedy, Joel Osteen type stuff. You're a good person. 99% of people are good people, as Allah, Joel Osteen version of the Bible. So these days, the way it's gotten is, have you ever been a supporter of traditional marriage? I mean, you can not just lose your job. You can get into serious trouble if you disagree with homosexual perversion and you don't accept privileges for perverts. Now, just looking at the face of choice and tolerance over there, if abortion is such an acceptable choice, why do photos of abortion make pro-choicers so angry? And how dare people make fun of our peaceful religion? You know, the only religion on the planet called peaceful is the most violent, intolerant religion on the planet. If you can call Islam peaceful, what do you call the Amish? I mean, they're really peaceful. So, Antonio Gramsci, he identified 5 primary culture-transforming institutions to infiltrate and to subvert. And he said the first place is education. The second is entertainment. In fact, as I said, communism was the only party in town at Hollywood at its inception, and literally the only party in town. There's no other political party thinking of infiltrating Hollywood. They were in there from the inception, and they got a stranglehold on Hollywood. So much so that when a person like Kirk Cameron got converted, his career was over. He'd never get another job again. They'd never forgive him. Growing pains, atheist, fine. Convert to Christ, out. The news media, super important. Forget news, it's more like views. And Marxists have controlled the press early on. The media is not a reflection of reality, and some of you have seen this picture before. After the Charlie Hebdo massacres, the heads of 26 countries walked in Paris in front of a march of 1 million people, we read. And I looked at this picture and I thought, wow, there's Netanyahu, there's Angela Merkel, there's Francois Hollande, head of France. All these other leaders thought, how did the security people organize this? Well, all is not as it seems, because that's the actual photo. They weren't walking at the head of 1 million people. Maybe there were 1 million people in Paris, but they weren't leading them. And you can just see, it's a total controlled group. This is Rent-A-Mob. I mean, this is just a photo op. Nothing else, it's a photo op. But from this perspective, it looks like, yeah, the whole street's full of people. And like this one, notice the journalist crouching down to get a picture from below. So the impression is of Barack Hussein Obama walking in Tanzania, unafraid of the people, amongst happy crowds, waving American flags on this side, Tanzanian flags on that side. They've all got the same outfits, they're wearing the same color hats, they've got the same flags. But it's spontaneous, understand, totally spontaneous. And, of course, you've got the security people immediately behind. It's only 3 deep here and completely and utterly a photo op. But it's designed to give a false impression. That's how easy it is. Religious institutions, they have controlled the religious institutions for a long time. If you take the Bible seriously, you will not become a bishop in the Church of England and so on. I mean, they will just kick you out and so on. And, of course, the political institutions. Well, once you've got the education, news media, entertainment, the religious and political fall in your hands naturally within a generation. 2 Chronicles 19 verse 2 says, should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Therefore the wrath of the Lord is upon you. George Orwell said and warned, and we've seen these come true, a public education system that dumbs us down, that doesn't educate, indoctrinated by corporate-owned mass media, gives you a whole lot of falsehood, socially engineered by Hollywood movies, pop culture, music, and TV program. You just think of these people who the things they say, how they say it, how they dress, how they behave, totally orchestrated by the media. I mean, I can just give an old-fashioned example, but I remember my girls being absolutely fascinated in the beach, coming home with this crab, and, you know, "Mommy, Mommy, look!" And as the mum leaned down the hallway and she saw the crab, she leapt up, flung up her hands and screamed. So my girls dropped the crabs and flung up their hands and screamed. They stood there screaming in the hallway. A few seconds before, my girls had found these crabs absolutely fascinating. But Mommy taught them that, you know, like the movies teach you, a mouse runs across the floor, what are you meant to do? Jump on a chair and scream. Now, that's not the way many girls behave. I mean, if that happened to Alishka, she'd get down and play with it or something. But there's people who've been pre-programmed by the media to, you know, behave in a certain way. Oh, mouse, jump on a chair, scream. Or see a crab, fling up your hands and scream. So there's some things that are pre-programmed, but it's not necessarily natural. Like, I grew up and I found animals, you know, wild animals, just attracted to them. And there's other people who, you know, they see a lion or something, they want to scream and run away. I see a lion, I want to go there and hug them. You know, I've got a totally different way of thinking, but I was brought up amongst animals. So my outlook is different. I certainly wasn't trained how to do this by Hollywood. We've been drugged, brainwashed, and robbed by Big Pharma and American healthcare racket, and I'm afraid it's here too. Tricked into thinking that your country is a democracy, not knowing it's a corporate oligarchy. What is the worst crime you can commit in South Africa? What is the crime that they will never forgive and you will go to jail minimum 10 years for? Illegal diamond buying. In the old South Africa, in the new South Africa, Namibia, Botswana. Any diamond, even if it's on your farm and you found it, it belongs to De Beers. If you are scuba diving off the coast and you find a diamond, it belongs to De Beers. If you're in the Orange River and you find a diamond, it belongs to De Beers. Every single diamond in the whole of South Africa, Namibia and Botswana belongs to De Beers. And they will not forgive. I mean, you will go to jail for diamond, illegal diamond buying. That is the worst crime you could commit, old or new. So who owns South Africa's government? And then, you know, you think of China's role and so on. There's a lot of bizarre things that go on that don't fit into the narrative of party politics and so on. There's a power behind it all. And then you see a lot of these guys in front, just puppets. So, but George Orwell saw this coming. When I went to America in 1988, January 1988, I actually got to see and hear Ronald Reagan. He was so close, he walked right past me. I could have reached out and touched him. Probably had my arm broken by his Secret Service if I'd tried. But he walked past, I was in the fourth row, heard him speak, and one of the first things he said, government is not the solution to the problem. Government is the problem. And then he said, the 9 most terrifying words in English language are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help you. And people laugh. He says, government's philosophy is, if it works, tax it. If it doesn't work, subsidize it. The closest thing to eternal life you'll get on earth is a government-subsidized program. And he just carried on, one after the other, of just anti-government things. Ronald Reagan really latched, he connected with the people because he didn't want big government, he wanted to make government smaller. Give more power back to the people. Decentralize and so on. Now, that is so antithetical. But he was about the only person in the White House before Trump who wasn't a member of the Skulls and Bones, Council of Foreign Relations, Illuminati crowd and so on. And he is in office for, what, a couple of months, and they shot him, and he was like centimeters from the bullet hitting his heart. It was a very close call. Almost lost his presidency before it had begun. Dr. James Kendi frequently warned of this war on the family. During this lockdown, my family has been every Sunday listening to and watching sermons of Dr. James Kendi, and his sermons back in the 80s and 90s were more relevant today than they were when they were preached. He understood where the culture was going. Dr. James Dobson wrote a book, War Against Children, which we have in our library, and we at one stage ordered 100 copies, really important, promoted from CLB, War on the Children, showing how Hollywood and the Education Department and so much else, it's a war against children. Of course, the abortion industry, the pornography industry, there's so much. Children are a target. Ken Ham has documented how the erosion of biblical inerrancy and the foundational importance of the Bible book of Genesis has eroded the foundations of Christian civilization. I've written on how Marxists subvert churches and society. Do not be deceived. We've got audio and video and articles on the web of these. These are presentations we've given at the Reformation Society before, how propaganda changes perceptions and people. The 20th century has been the most propagandized age in history. Never have people been more deceived than the 20th century and 21st century, naturally. The battle for the mind in the news media. Yet the response of all too many is, don't be so negative. Don't be so critical. Everything shall turn out all right. Alles zal rechtkom. Don't worry. Hakuna Matata. Be happy. Just preach the gospel. All we can do is pray. These are the last days. Jesus coming soon. We'll be raptured before the tribulation. I've been hearing that for 43 years, as long as I've been a Christian. We'll be raptured before the tribulation. That's the gospel according to Hollywood. Because, hey, look, I mean, we know that on fire, dedicated Bible-believing, born-again Christians in the Soviet Union, they got persecuted. Yeah, sure. I mean, millions of them got killed. And in Red China, yeah, that's true. And North Korea and Vietnam and Ethiopia and Sudan. But lukewarm, Laodicean, half-hearted, compromising, worldly Christians, they don't go through persecution. They don't go through tribulation. They get raptured. They get wrapped up in bubble wrap and cotton wool, and they get sent in bog at heaven. Do not bruise or bump an inconvenience on the way. As Bill Bathman said, it's not that Western Christians aren't willing to suffer for Christ. They just don't want to be inconvenienced. I mean, to expect them to go to church when it's raining is already too much. And forget about persecution. They don't even want to go out if the weather's bad. Yet this year, we've seen 3.5 billion people on the planet placed under some form of government lockdown, including ourselves. With hundreds of thousands of churches closed by government order, even during Easter, who would have thought this could have happened in our lifetime? Who could have predicted this a year ago? Who could have predicted this 4 months ago? Who could have imagined major streets in major cities in America turned into war zones looking like Somalia and Syria? Billions of dollars damaged by looters and arsonists while the police stood by. While government and church leaders literally bowed to the mob and literally washed their feet and literally kissed their boots. Including mayors, governors, police chiefs. And ordered police to stand by while hundreds of shops were looted and burned. And then district attorneys were told not to prosecute looters. Let's get our priorities straight. You've got to prosecute surfers and hairdressers, you know, people who break the COVID lockdown. But people are just minding their own business, looting stores and burning things down. They're just having fun. Leave them alone. Curtis Powers warned about this in his Agenda and Agenda 2 documentaries. And what's the key point he keeps saying? The issue is never the issue. The issue is the revolution. They don't care about women or employees or workers or blacks or any of the people they claim to be caring about, the young or whatever the issue is that they're claiming. They're just using them as expendable cannon fodder for the revolution. The issue is never the issue. Because all those people always suffer more under the government. So take the poor black people in Zimbabwe. They get liberated. Do their lives improve? It gets immeasurably worse. And every year it gets even worse. And the guys at the top, the Mnangagwas and Mugabes, they're doing fine. They're billionaires. Thank you. Dr. David Noble in his Understand the Times warned us for decades how Marxists work. Absolutely brilliant. And he summarized it in The Battle for Truth for people who wanted it in a short version, and then he made it even more easy in a novel type format of Mind Siege, Battle for Truth in the New Millennium. Ted Baer and Pat Boone put together the Culturewise family. They actually asked me to give a couple of chapters to this book too. Outstanding in how to understand films, media, critically analyzing. Yet most Christians have ignored all these warnings. They've chosen rather Arminian, antinomian, prayer of Jabez, materialistic, superficial, sensational, weak, willow creed, saddleback, purpose-driven, sinner-friendly, religious, entertainment, social clubs. Instead of real, Bible-based, Christ-centered, Great Commission-orientated churches. We're involved in a colossal spiritual world war. The eternal destinies of millions of souls are at stake. Christian civilization itself, built up by the sacrifices of many generations, is being eroded, undermined, subverted, and sabotaged before our very eyes. Never has it been more obvious why we need Great Commission Ministries, Biblical Worldview Ministries, Reformation Ministries, Answers in Genesis Ministries. It's absolutely essential. The eternal destinies of millions of souls are at stake. Christian civilization itself, built up by the sacrifice of many generations, are being eroded, undermined, subverted, and sabotaged before our very eyes. And let me just remind you of some of those edifices that were built up by Western civilization, like Neuschwanstein in Bavaria. Beautiful homes, magnificent cathedrals, phenomenal art, gracious landscapes, phenomenal bridges. I mean, the buildings, the architecture, the designs, the phenomenal art and the music of Handel, and the libraries and the books and the intelligence and the creativity of generations is despised, ignored, and regarded as worth nothing. Never before has it been more obvious we're living in a world in rebellion to Almighty God. Our leaders have generally failed us. Not only the political leaders, but in most cases our religious leaders have grossly failed us. As a missionary to persecuted churches for the last 40 years, I've been dedicated to comforting the afflicted, persecuted Christians in communist and Muslim lands. We comfort the afflicted, but also afflicting the comfortable in superficial, materialistic Western countries, calling our people in our neighborhoods to repentance. As we did when we marched through Cape Town, the biggest marches Cape Town had ever seen to that date, 30,000 people to Parliament to present to Mandela's office protest. And a year later, we did 10,000 people marching to Parliament to protest again against the attempts to legalize abortion, pornography, and other evils. There are churches where they are serious about proclaiming God's law and applying God's word, but they get criticized, they get attacked, they get subverted. Now, you can listen to or view many of these presentations given recently, like exposing and countering these cataclysmic events like the pandemic, panic, propaganda, and priorities. We've got audios and videos and articles of these on the webs, and the racism, riots, role of the media and revolution just 2 weeks ago. And there's a lot of organizations as part of this New World Order that they're talking about. We've got the world's deadliest religion, which is secular humanism, is actually a bizarre cult. They are pretending to be enlightened and moral, but in fact, it's a disease. It's a false religion. Last week, we dealt with Black Lives Matter, a new religious cult. So to help to counter the disinformation and censorship by our mission, the mainstream, lamestream media, we launched the Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism website 2.5 years ago, right here, and the HMS School of Christian Journalism Facebook page, which has a phenomenal reach. Literally millions reached, literally hundreds of thousands of reactions and engagements. And you can access many of the presentations that have been given at this Reformation Society on the reformationsa.org website. I mean, these are resources. There's a vast amount of Bible studies and sermons on livingstonfellowship.co.za website, and some of the sermons have been produced into books, Ten Commandments, audio series, the whole Bible survey, Old Testament survey, New Testament survey, and audio and print. And now we've got the William Carey Bible Institute, 27 subjects, totally free, a huge amount of top names donating the materials that we make completely free. Now, we designed this William Carey Bible Institute specifically for persecuted Christians in restricted access countries. We were thinking Egypt and Sudan and so on. And, well, during lockdown, we just made available to everyone because we need this. With so many churches closed, so many colleges closed, we need to give people, like what William Carey did. William Carey didn't finish junior school, but he became a doctor in Oriental languages, translated the Bible into 35 languages, Bibles, New Testaments, and Gospels. Most prolific Bible translator in history, and he did it just from personal reading. He became one of the most incredible linguists in history. He must have had the gift of tongues. And we think that's a good name to name our college after, because people will have the discipline of reading. It's all available, vast amounts. One of the most strategic priorities we can do is to ensure that young people understand the times and know what God's people should do in the face of Marxist revolution, psychological warfare, intimidation. So getting to the schools is critical. When the schools are allowed to meet again, we want to get back to them, minister to them.
What did we call youngest doing this first meeting? tomorrow.
Outstanding. Well, Paul Young is an example to all of us. Here's a man in his 70s, and he can go to 250 or more schools a year. I know some years he's done 300 or 400 meetings. And phenomenal. One of the most strategic ministries in the world is Answers in Genesis, the Creation Museum. They have 700 full-time employees. The Ark Encounter, magnificent. And they're tackling the issues. They've got the courage to tackle the issues. There's an excellent video I saw just recently, and it's in our library, Delusion, Is America Under Judgment? And we've now put on a William Carey site also the video of it, where he tackles basically Deuteronomy 28, Romans 1, 18:32, with society under judgment. He's talking about America, but we could apply it to our country just as easily, about applying Lordship of Christ to all areas of life. Well, our Biblical Worldview Summit every year is an exciting crash course on worldviews and a biblical response to the issues of the day. And I don't know why more people don't take advantage of it, because we need to ensure that our young people don't go into a hostile world without the weapons, the insights, the resources needed to enable them to fight the good fight of faith. And how to give an answer to everyone, ask them for the hope that's within them. I've been surrounded by hostile media and people swearing at me many a time. Couldn't even count how often. And as a result, I put together my answers to 14 main questions I find that they throw at us. You know, how do I know there's a God? What evidence do you have? And how do I know the Bible's the word of God? And what evidence do you have that Jesus rose from the dead? And all these different things. And, you know, how can a good God allow even? Why does God allow suffering? And so there's these things that they'll throw in. So I've got battle-tested answers I put together in the Answering Skeptics audio and book series. But since 1990, Frontline Fellowship has been organizing biblical worldview summits near Cape Town, applying the Lordship of Christ to all areas of life. That was one of our very first. 1998, that I've got a picture of. And sometimes we were in Simonstown. And this is all Simonstown, Rocklands. And for many years, that was our main place, Rocklands campsite. And lots of great opportunities, debates, and a good place for Bible drill, Bible exams, and ministering. People came from all over, different groups at Rocklands. And then we started to move up to Back to Basics from 2010. And for the Biblical Worldview seminars and summits and the camps, it is obviously a great place to get out, stretch minds, stretch muscles, reach, stretch, run, get dirty, go through obstacles, get out of your comfort zone, reach higher, go faster, and it's, yeah, hit the mark, and make rafts, and sing, and dance, and we did all sorts of other things, do Bible drills, and so these Biblical Worldview Summits have been a great time for all who take part in it, but I wonder, how do other Christian families think their children are going to manage without dealing with these issues, getting together with others in a structured, good program of being able to be prepared to deal with a hostile world. And we've conducted biblical worldview seminars throughout Africa, Zambia, Tanzania, Kenya, I mean, one of the biggest ever in Kenya, and in the Congo. Our biggest ever was in the Congo, actually. We conducted biblical worldview seminars in Nigeria and Zambia and Zimbabwe and Namibia, and across different parts of South Africa. And some places have got great obstacle courses and good zip lines. This is up at Three Rivers and back to the Bible Mission. So our next one is planned for the 4th to 11th of January 2021. We certainly hope lockdown's over and everyone can travel by then. But we should be planning now to send young people and recommend to go to this life-transforming event. We call to be more than conquerors through Christ Jesus our Lord. Never has it been more clear that we need to be trained to evangelize. This world is plainly in rebellion to God, en route to an eternity in hell. We need to get our young people onto the streets. We've got to engage the culture, get involved in evangelism, like small Paul. Get out there and draw people to Christ, as he says. Going into the townships, climbing the mountains, to get people to realize obstacles are only there to be overcome. And you can't get to the top of the mountain in one jump. It takes thousands of steps. In fact, Calvin calculated on one of our hikes, it was, what, something like 30,000 steps that you've taken in that day? 30,000 steps. But you can do it if you just keep going, one step in front of the other. And, of course, being there is the best, but if a person can't, at least they can make use of the audio, MP3s, DVDs, data discs, and so on. And our next one's planned for the middle of the year next year. Next Great Commission course, 25th of June to the 14th of July, 2021. We thought we'd try a winter GCC so we could attract more people from the Northern Hemisphere to come down as well. Putting feet to your faith. Who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Who will stand up for me against the workers of iniquity? Well, these friends in Ethiopia took down this massive idol of Lenin on the way outside Addis Ababa in 1991 after the fall of the Soviet Union. Smash cultural Marxism. Marxism is not just economics. Marxism is not just politics. There's a cultural Marxism. And if you can remember, that's what the Gramsci strategy is. That's what the Termite strategy is. That's what we're seeing that's rotted the society to make it unable to respond or even recognize the threat when it comes from within. So, questions, comments, complaints, criticisms? Yes.
Tearing down the statue of Lenin is tearing down an idol.
Yes, that's right. Where I see it. Yeah.
But tearing down the statue of Smuts or Cecil John Rhodes is erading.
I see the connection. Yes. Okay. Now, first of all, in the Soviet Union, they took down 26,000 statues of Vladimir Lenin and Karl Marx in the years after the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991. 26,000. I mean, they didn't have that many cities. They didn't have that many towns. There must have been little villages. For goodness sakes, how do you get that many statues here? So, look, I would have no problem with being able to go to the museum and see a statue of Lenin, or to go to the town where Lenin was born or something, and there's a statue of him. Okay, here's a horrible, hideous, disgusting, despicable excuse for a human being, but this is where he is born. But there's no excuse to have a statue everywhere. You know, like, what did he ever do for Addis Ababa? So I can understand why the people, it represented the Soviet threat, the communists, the Cubans, the ones who'd burned the villages and done forced removals. And, you know, the Red Terror killed vast amounts of people under Colonel Mengistu in Ethiopia. So it symbolized something very hateful that had murdered many of them in their lifetime. This isn't, you know, that he did something bad to people a couple of hundred years ago. It's in their lifetime, it symbolized their oppression. So, for example, during the Reformation, a lot of reformers, like Ulrich Zwingli, took down every crucifix, every statue of Mary, statue of Jesus, statue of Sacred Heart of St. Crispin or whatever. And they also got rid of these, where this is a piece of the true cross and this is a nail that pierced Christ's foot and this is the spear. They had enough nails from the true cross to shoe all the horses in Saxony, he said. And as Martin Luther pointed out, 14 of the 12 apostles were buried in Spain. And there was a lot of nonsense. But still, the Protestants got rid of a lot of it. Now, not all of them. Some people like Martin Luther said, no, this is still part of our history, and take it out of the church and move it into the museum. So I've gone to a museum in Wittenberg, for example, and, oh, there's the crucifix, and there's the statues, and there's some of the statues got fingers broken off. And pity, but still. There's a difference between history and idolatry. So to move the statue out of the church and moved it into the museum, it saves the culture for history. We see it, we learn from it. I could see why they wouldn't want it in their church, because you don't want an idol in your church. Some went so wild they destroyed them all. And you think, oh, if they could have just saved some of them and put some in the museum. So I understand there's culture, there's history, and then there's idolatry. So let's not get so worked up that we would destroy. Take, for example, in this country, we had the Anglo-Boer War. Absolutely hideous. So many Boer women and children died in the concentration camps. 30,000 farms were destroyed. Huge amount of destruction. And yet, I'm not aware that any Afrikaans people went on a mission to get rid of every statue of Queen Victoria, under whose name it took place. You might have driven past Milner Road. And he's the man most responsible for this hideous policy. And there's a lot of things that were connected with the English government who had enacted that hideous policy. But there wasn't rooting out the history of it. But you'd understand why a person wouldn't want it in their home or in their church. So to me, I wouldn't want us to go on a war against history or culture or art. But we certainly would want to remove idolatry. So I would have no problem, for example, when this country is a free country, taking down most of the Nelson Mandela statues. But there's no reason why they can't have one in Kumu or where he had made an impact, where he came from. You would want some Mandela, maybe the Mandela statue they've got right now on the City Hall front steps, they could move into a museum in Cape Town. But there's no need to have it on the City Hall steps in a future situation. I mean, he's not even from Cape Town. So you can have a balance looking at it. One doesn't want to get too iconoclastic, but on the other hand, you don't want to tolerate idolatry.
Okay.
You see, there's a balance. Yes. 26,000 statues of Lenin and Marx, but 25,990 too many. But there's nothing wrong with having a few, even though we despise the guy.
Yeah.
Yes. Most churches have closed, effectively closed. It's absolutely unbelievable. My friends in Eastern Europe would never, ever, ever have stopped going to church. It didn't matter how illegal they made it. I just don't understand what has happened. But because they came health, medical, it's like, oh, okay. And now you've got churches regathering and you can't sing. You can't lay hands. You can't have devotion. You can't have Lord's Supper, and you can't have baptism. What? Who are they to tell the church what they can do? But because they're now saying no, but this is a medical health issue. Somehow or another, there's a whole lot of people who I've got Christians arguing that no, you've got to obey them because they're not closing churches for persecution. They're closing it for health reasons. Well, the commies did the same thing. In Soviet Union, they had. We've got a book on it. The psychiatric hospitals in Russia. They locked up thousands of ministers and tens of thousands of Christians in psychiatric prisons. Yeah. Funny jacket, this whole lot thrown to padded cells, because they knew they were insane because they didn't believe in scientific socialism. So obviously insane. And these are perfectly normal people, and they just threw them in there, and then they could say, no, they weren't arrested for their faith. They're in a medical hospital, a psychiatric hospital. Yes,
Peter. We all know that everyone on earth bears the image of God. We're all made in His image. But unfortunately, with the education system, we've got God image bearers that are indoctrinated and tough to break through, such as our youth nowadays. Now, I have a brewing concern for our youth that I would like to know from your opinion. What is your strategy in which to pierce through the fog, and how do you battle with a fool that doesn't know he's a fool? You know, how can we get through to the youth and ensure that they're informed about their the history of the past?
Well, we have to get creative. So, praise God for ministries like, I think, Answers in Genesis are super good because they come from a scientific point of view. And I mean, it's absolutely fascinating to look at the Ark. 60% of people have come to look at the Ark Encounter, for example, which is the biggest wooden structure on Earth. By the way, they've got so much more there too. Longest zip lines in all of North America. Literally takes several hours to go through them over the magnificent valleys. But Answers in Genesis is attracting 60% of people who come there come from an unchurched background. Just fascinating. So that's excellent. Then you look at Ted Baer with his movie guide, and you look at people like the Kendrick brothers bring out these films, Courageous, War Room, and so on. There's no doubt that they are reaching people who couldn't easily be reached. Now, C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, authors of Narnia books, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and the Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, they came from a Christian worldview, And they were trying to reach a post-Christian society that was so anti-Christian, they thought they had to come in the way of allegory. And so presenting Jesus in the person of Aslan in Narnia was one way that C.S. Lewis was thinking in terms of reaching a post-Christian world. And interesting way is a lot of people absolutely fascinated by Lord of the Rings or fascinated by Narnia who are not Christians and never even realize there's a spiritual significance behind it. And you can start your conversation with them on that basis. So I find there's creative artists who've got this way. Or for example, you take someone who, they love art. They can start talking about some of the greatest art in history, which almost all has Christian origins and emphasis, or architecture. Well, the cathedrals, music, Handel's Messiah, Bach. So we can come from other directions. Some people are fascinated with history. Well, that's my sort of field, and I can take people through history and show them the Christian roots. We've got books here like What If Jesus Had Never Been Born, or How Christianity Transformed the World, and how they show everything good in the world, and scientific, everything, comes from Christian roots, direct results of teachings of Christ, by followers of Christ. So there's different ways you can reach different people depending on what their interests are. Now, one of my great interests, along with history, is military and animals and conservation, wildlife. So I find I've started Facebook pages on those subjects like Wonderful Wildlife, We Love God's Animals. And I'm reaching a lot of secular people with that fascination. And they tolerate my Bible input because they share my love of animals or interest in military history. Or in a case of Rhodesian. So you can find a point of commonality with almost anybody. And if that's your field, you could build bridges and develop relationships and help them.
Yeah, I definitely think having a good knowledge basis of human behavior, especially on a mass scale, I mean, there's a lot of attention on TikTok, the platform now, and being able to put an interesting spin on that, as cliche as it might sound, you're leveraging incredible attention being put to, you know, piggybacking off of human behavior. You know, it's amazing that you address tough issues like Black Lives Matter and inform the truth behind it. And that's very important because there's a lot of attention towards that hashtag, towards that title. It is, they call it clickbaity. But referencing to the act of...
Well, that's probably advertising-driven, that too. Well, we're not into advertising, but we are trying to reach people. Reach a lost world. Now, Way of the Master's got some brilliant evangelistic tools, talking points, things that you can launch off, right down to the allusions, funniest one-liners, through to... next door, we've got all these different tracks, and I often find them as this optical illusion tests and things like that. We can get a conversation started with somebody who's interested in this because they're very creatively done. And then on that basis, get into conversations that we can actually address their conscience. So there's no doubt about it. We can be creative. I think the best ministries out there right now for reaching the secular world is Answers in Genesis and Way of the Master. I think they're just brilliant. But maybe some of you know others. What else would you recommend? Good ways of reaching the secular and the lost. We're the local distributors in South Africa for Answers in Genesis and for Way of the Master, Living Waters, because I thought, why reinvent the wheel? They've got the resources. Bring them over here. Any other good resources you'd recommend?
I have another question regarding, I know you said one of the last stages that you mentioned in these termites penetrating the Christian worldview is through pornography and making sexually explicit, making our population sexually explicit.
Yeah, that's Marcuse's particular contribution.
How can we flip that and project God's goodness through sexuality? Mm.
There are some very good groups. True Love Waits is one. There's also the ring thing. What are they called?
The silver ring thing.
There's some very creative groups that have. Western Conservatory has gotten really good materials they've produced as well. The Botkin sisters, Return the Daughters. So there's some good resources. Now, in this boardroom here, we've got book library. audio library, video library, and there's a lot of great resources, documentaries, videos that have redeeming value. Of course, the bookshop's got a whole lot of different tools. You know, there's 6,000 titles just in the bookshop. There's more in this library here. And this is only part of it. We've got a lot more library. And when we go upstairs, we'll have more of our books displayed because we've run out of bookshelves right now. But the resources are great. We've got a very creative bunch of Christians out there in the world. The trouble is most Christians and most churches are just absorbing the mass media from the secular world. They're not even aware of the Christian alternatives available. And that's why I put quite a lot of emphasis tonight on the Reformation resources to counter the revolution. Now, what I've been working on, and I didn't manage to get finished enough this week, but I'll have it ready by next week, is how psychological warfare works. Because most people don't understand psyops or psy war. And psy war, psychological warfare, is most of it. And we've got a film on the Chinese origins, tracking down the origins of the Wuhan virus. I haven't got the title exactly right. It's, I think, tracking down the origins of the Wuhan virus. And it's an excellent documentary. And they go to a book back in 2013 where China says, we are at war with the United States of America. But we can't beat them militarily. We've got to fight them with asymmetrical warfare. Now, this was written by one of their chief of staff, top military generals within Red China. We need to use economic warfare, and we've got to foment riots in the streets. But to do this, we need to precede it by a pandemic, which will lead to a lockdown to make it possible to mobilize for the riots in the streets. Now, this was written in 2013. And the Chinese literate people who have exposed this. And this documentary was prepared before these things even came out. And so it's fascinating. So I want to show that film one of these nights, but it's absolutely brilliant. But the Psy War, they recognize we must use asymmetrical warfare. Asymmetrical warfare, this is beyond unconventional warfare. This is where they're using viruses, lockdowns, and riots to subvert a country and bring about economic collapse. Because they can't beat them militarily, they've got to beat them from within. Now, that's interesting. Now, then think of the timing of these, of the lockdown, the pandemic, and the riots. 2020. Is there anything interesting happening in 2020? Oh, my. What a surprise. Yes, there's a presidential election. And Donald Trump is going for a second term. In fact, he is a shoo-in for the second term until the pandemic, the lockdown, economic recession as a result, and now the riots. Can they derail him? Well, historically, an incumbent who has a good economy will get re-elected. An incumbent who has a bad economy will get voted out. Just always happens. Sometimes you have an October surprise, like in 2008, when the Republicans were on top, and suddenly there was an economic collapse. The 2008 economic derivatives bubble burst, and tens of millions of people lost their savings, their pensions, their jobs, their homes. And in came Barack Hussein Obama, and he changed the Middle East and a whole lot of other things in the most terrible way. So it's quite possible this is another one, but before the pandemic, there was the attempt to impeach him. So it looks like they've lined up everything they can to derail Trump, and Trump is like a train that is not interested in being derailed. He doesn't care what anyone thinks. He's barreling on there. So I don't know if they're going to succeed, but boy, they're pulling out all the stops. They hate him. Isn't that interesting? So I do think that this is mostly about Trump. But of course, that's short term. Long term, it's to advance the revolution. If this revolution succeeds, God forbid, but if this revolution in America succeeds, they will go back to, like this, whenever this happened, George Floyd in Minneapolis, they will celebrate it every year with a public holiday like Bastille Day is in 14th of July in France for the French Revolution, like in this country, Soweto Day, Youth Day, 16 Junus celebrates it. They will celebrate that as a holy day to their new revolutionary order. That is the kind of mentality we're dealing with.
I can do you one better. They're baptizing people now where he died. I saw a video of it. They are actually baptizing people where he died.
This is cultic.
This
is a new religion. And by the way, you can't criticize it. Well, I mean, we do, but if you do, you get really damned to hell. It's a very intolerant new religion. So it started with an inquisition, instantly. But as Christians, we always go against the stream. Remember, even a dead fish can float downstream. A steel-headed trout goes upstream, though. We're not interested in going downstream.